You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feet to the right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Hey, welcome, Kings fans, to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, the unofficial podcast of RinkRoyalty.com. I'm Scott Kimball, and before we get started, I just want to let you know that you can find us on Twitter at RinkRoyalty and also at Royalty_pod. We got a great show lined up for you today. Before we get going, I'm going to bring in our star cast right here. First of all, we got Mr. Ryan Spikes. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. How are we doing tonight?
Very good. Very good. A little disappointed in that rain game that just ended, but that's okay.
Yeah, it was a baseball score that broke out.
Right, the tribute to 80s hockey tonight.
Yeah. Up next, final yeah. For our listeners.
Yeah, they, oh my God. We have to talk about that again.
Moving on.
Up next, we got Ryan Cowley. How are you, Ryan?
You know, overall, guys, are really well. I'm feeling a bit better today. After last night's game, I close all the blinds and shut myself off from the world. So I'm okay now.
Yeah, I hear you there. Yeah, I hear you there.
The blinds are so closed.
There's always squirrel.
Right?
Oh, yeah. No. Come on, semantics, guys.
Yeah, there you go. Up next, Mr. Russell Morgan. What's going on, Russ?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good to be here again.
That's right. Gonna have a great show tonight. And last but not least, from our end of it anyway, Mr. Jack Weber. What's going on, Jack?
Not too much, Scott. Just, you know, went out and enjoyed some nice spring weather we had in Toronto today. Tried to forget about that Kings game last night.
Oh, don't we all want to forget about that? I hope everybody's got their beverage of choice to help do that. My God. All right. So I want to bring in our guest this week. Now, this week we're doing a little cross-podcast promotions here. We like to talk with other podcasters for the LA Kings world. It's always a good time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring in the guys from the Bannerman's LA King podcast. First of all, I got Mr. Carl Blickian. How you doing, Carl?
I'm doing great, guys, and I really do think this is the collab that everyone's been clamoring for. I'm so proud that we could deliver it. and it's already lived up to the expectations. So everything from here on out is gravy, in my opinion.
Yeah, we can shut it down.
All right. Okay, that's it, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
Do I get to say hi?
I guess.
Don't need it. Don't need you. I handle it.
Silent partner. Take care, folks.
And I got your partner on the line here. I got Mr. Vari Garibian. What's going on, Vari?
Hey, Scott. Nice to be here, guys. I agree with Gatto. I think we're like the Avengers of Kings podcasts, and we're finally coming together here.
Excellent. All right. So for this show, folks, what we want to do is we're going to let the Bannerman pick out 10 of our LA Kings, and we're going to hand out grades for those Kings. So we're going to see if we agree, we disagree, or whatever we're going to do. So we're going to let you guys lead it off. So why don't you guys give us your first King that we can grade?
Hey, before we do that, Scott, real quick, I'm just going to jump in. I just want to ask, you know, how did you guys decide to come up with your podcast?
I'll start it off, and I won't tell them all the details, Vardy, so you could have a place in this show.
All right, great. Thanks.
We've been fans for as long as personally I can remember. I don't have any memory of my life where I wasn't a Kings fan, and I know that sounds crazy, but it's very true. I hear these very romanticized tales of my dad taking me to the Forum when I had no idea who I was, what I was, where I was, all that good stuff. Tickets were pretty cheap back then, too, so we got to go often. But, you know, over the years, I think Vardy and I being friends as long as we have, and it's been a very long time since we were kids, we ended up always kind of watching games at the same time, not in the same place, but at the same time. We ended up kind of texting back and forth about the games, like almost play by play, you know, breaking down each play, each goal. And it got to the point where, like, why don't we just kind of turn on a microphone and do this vocally instead of, you know, getting our phone bill up with our data charges so much. So that's really how it came about. I mean, there's a ton of details in between, but that's kind of the genesis of the Bannerman podcast.
Yeah. I think that's a nice little summary. It was just, you know, our wives would basically say, are you texting your mistress every time that we were talking to one another while we were,
I don't appreciate that.
I mean, they were jealous of our relationship. So what can you say? But that's really what it was. I mean, we were just talking so much about it, and it's not to say that we know any more than anyone else, but we certainly like to talk to one another, and we thought, what the heck, let's just do this for fun, just kind of see what happens. And I think we're up to episode 67, 68, somewhere around there now, going across the course of 3 seasons. So, you know, we're not recording every single week because life gets in the way, but I think we initially started it for fun, and then it just kind of became something that we really keep trying to get better every episode, and we really keep trying to do this because we enjoy it. Like, it's nice to have more and more people listening. It's nice to have all the interaction on Twitter. It's nice to be involved with other podcasts, obviously, but I think more and more for us, it's become a kind of a point of pride to be able to do this and do what we consider a decent job from episode to episode.
That's awesome. And I saw that you guys were recently on the Kings Men podcast, all the Kings Men podcasts. I was just wondering if you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, that was kind of nice. It was kind of out of the blue. You know, we had met Jesse before in person. I want to say not maybe it was last summer. We went to Irvine because I live in San Diego and Gatto lives up in L.A. where I'm originally from. And so we met kind of halfway in Irvine when the prospects tournament was taking place between Colorado, Arizona Ducks and the Kings. And, you know, we were there, we were watching, having a good time. And Jesse was just kind of there covering it. And so we went, we introduced ourselves and we kind of kept the line of communication open. And obviously he's got his own thing going on and the Kings have their own iHeartRadio network and everything like that going. And so it just kind of, I think over the years got to the point where we were communicating a bunch and he was kind enough to extend an invitation to us. And obviously we went ahead and we accepted that.
And I'm glad you brought that up, Ryan, because one of the main reasons we started this podcast is because we saw, you know, Jesse's podcast when he started, he was a fan. He was not involved with the Kings. It was him and his buddy, the Royal Half. So they were very much like two guys who love to talk hockey, and they decided to do a podcast. And clearly their success is now, you know, everyone kind of knows how far he's gone with that. And he's, you know, what he did is he took fandom and he made it into seemingly a career, or at least a part of his career. So he was a big, him and the Royal Heifer, I think, were a big inspiration for us to get it started, because the one thing, and obviously you guys will probably agree with this, is these days, you know, fans are not just people who just watch the games. There's more to it, with all the information, with all the analytics, with all the resources we have. Like, knowledgeable fans are becoming more and more common, which is a great thing to see. Absolutely. And what's even better is that we're getting the confidence to go on platforms and discuss the game, because we know the game. I'm confident in saying that now, and I could say the same for you guys.
We appreciate that. And, you know, this is obviously, as Scott said, episode 8 for us. You guys are close to 70. What would you say, I guess, the biggest thing that you've learned since you started your podcast?
We've probably learned different things individually. I think one of the things that we kind of stick to is, you know, we have an outline for every episode, not a thorough one. It's almost like 4 or 5 bullet points that we really want to hit. But we find that, in our opinion, and people are free to disagree, we find that our favorite episodes, the ones that we think come off the best, are the ones where we start with the bullet points and then we just kind of see where it takes us. You know, like, it leads to some of the best open-ended conversations. And they're not always necessarily Kings related, you know, like we always say that we love hockey first and we love the Kings second. You know, it just happens to be that the Kings are the team that we experience the game most through and we love the most. But Hikaru and I have both played hockey most of our lives. We love the game more than the Kings. I have no shame in saying that. And so when we start every episode, kind of start, we talk, and then we just see where it takes us. We just let it run.
And awesome. Another thing I just want to add to that, another thing we've learned, and is that it's good to set yourself apart. There are so many Kings podcasts now in the space. Well, not too many, but there are now a handful at least. And if we all just kind of, you know, looked at the Kingsman podcast and did what they did, no one would listen to our show, because they have the resources, right? And they have the experience, they have the guests. Like, it'll be hard to compete. And we're not competing. I just want to clarify, I'm using that word, but I don't think there's competition here. There's, you know, how many, you know, you take all the Kings fans in LA, in California, and then you have to divide that into listeners. You have to divide that in. It just becomes a small group of people that probably look for this content. Right. But setting yourself apart, I think, it's happened for us organically, but it's been very important. I think what we try to do is, yes, we're a Kings show, but I think we pride ourselves. I'm proud of the fact that we can talk about any team, we can talk about any player, we can talk about any era, and we could bring it back to the Kings. So that's one thing I think we've learned is important to do, is that, yes, Kings fans are looking for us, most likely, if they're looking for a Kings podcast, but it's nice to be able to give them something else. Not saying other podcasts don't, but I think we make it a point to really discuss every other team as much as we can.
Yeah, and I love that you use the word non-compete, you know, because we've been wanting to get you guys on the podcast. You know, we're obviously at episode 8 for, I'll say, a while loosely, but we view it more of as a collaboration than Absolutely. Anything.
Oh, yeah. So no, it's funny, we joked with one another, you know, you guys were tweeting out for the last couple of weeks what the lineups were going to be like for the upcoming episodes. And it was like, you had the guys from Dover Hockey, you had Bernstein on, and then you had us, and we're like, something does not fit in these in this lineup. And so I don't know, it was kind of humbling seeing us in that lineup a little bit. I never thought I would be, you know, closing for DB, but here I am.
Oh, yeah, I mean, don't sell your guys short. This is an important episode for us, for sure.
I appreciate that. Guys. Happy to be here, guys.
Absolutely.
Happy to
be here. Yeah.
So, Scott, did you want to kind of dive back into – let's start with the grading, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know,
We lost Scott again. That's okay. So I'll just kind of take over. I've had to cover for him. He's a fireman, so he's had a last-minute – there are a couple of last-minute cancellations on us. So we real quick,
is the audio coming through okay? I've gotten a couple like buzzing tones and stuff. I don't know if those are my headphones or what is going on.
I think it's the Russians, actually.
What is that again?
It's the Russians, actually. So that's awkward. Yeah.
Our chief editor, man, he says it's good.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So we asked you guys to pick 10 prospects, 4 forwards, 4 defensemen, and 2 goalies. Obviously, the 2 goalies are pretty self-explanatory. We're at the mid-season point of the 2021 hockey season, and we would like to just kind of discuss. Let's start with the forwards. Just pick a player and just kind of dive into your grade and why you gave them that grade, and then we can respond.
Take it away, Gosh. You start it off.
Oh, I will gladly take it away because I'm going to start with one of my favorite Kings prospects, but he is now a full-time player, and that's Gabe Vilardi is the player that I like to start with. I gush about this kid on our show so much that I felt it was fitting for me to kind of start this off with him. And again, given his age, given the kind of flashes of brilliance we've seen from him, it's very, very, very hard for me not to give him an A. So I'm going to start off nice and rosy. We're going to be very complimentary. I'm going to give Gabe Vilardi an A. I think in terms of prospects, I can't think of a more impressive prospect that the Kings have had in the last decade, maybe 15 years, in my opinion. Obviously, when you go back that much, you're talking about Kopitar. You're talking about Drew Doughty came a little later. So maybe Drew Doughty was a little more impressive than Gabe Vilardi has been. But to me, he is the most impressive forward prospect the Kings have had in over a decade. I think for his age, the poise we've seen from him, the hands, the creativity, it's very, very exciting. And another reason I'm giving him an A, other than his on-ice play, is his ability to bounce back from what looked to be a debilitating back injury that could have derailed his career early on. Like, we were nervous. And on our show, I don't know how many times, like, we almost openly wept every time he got injured because we were so excited for this prospect. But I think, you know, there was a time when before the season where we were like, oh, you know, if Gabe's our second line center, we'd be happy. But now, watch out, man. I know we got Byfield in the line in the pipeline, but I would not be surprised if Gabe Vilardi is the future number one center of this team and not Quinton Byfield. So that's my kind of love letter to Gabe Vilardi.
Yeah, I like that. I like that letter grade, Carl. I mean, yeah, I would probably give him an A too. I mean, he's still a young prospect, but like you mentioned, I mean, he has that potential to be that number one star. I mean, I know when he was out for that extended period of time with that back injury, I mean, I was doing every search I could possibly do to try to figure out what was going on with that kid. See if he's skating, trying to figure out what agent he has so I can see what's going on with him. But I mean, when you see the highlights that he's putting up in Kingston, it was kind of, I mean, it was exciting to watch. You love the potential that he has. And he had those couple of games when he came and played with Ontario, and that was nice to see. And then he had to kind of get that setback. So that was a little discouraging. But when he came back, he kind of came back with some vengeance. And, I mean, he stepped in with the Kings last year, had 7 points in 10 games, and looked pretty good with FERC. So, I mean, this year has been kind of up and down for him, I would say. There's been times where he's been really exciting, and there's been times where he's been disappointed. I mean, yesterday was kind of – Todd McClellan kind of called him out today or last night after the presser and said that it's maybe time for us to sit some kids. Maybe it's him. I'm not sure. But, I mean, personally, I think it's just kind of like the line juggling that has been going on with Vilardi. I would like to see him playing with maybe some higher quality players. I mean, we'll probably talk about Kempe here later on, but I've kind of got a grudge against him. But I think he's been well, and I like the A grade for him.
Yeah, and what a feel-good story it was for him last year to come back after all he went through and scored, like, what, 5 seconds into his first shift and NHL game? I mean, how awesome was that? And, yeah, I mean, you know, really impressive start, I thought, to his career, and a little bit of adversity he's going through for the first time right now, struggling a bit lately. You know, McClellan called him out after the game yesterday, but it's to be expected. You know, you're going to hit a bit of a wall at some point as a young player, and now we just have to see how he responds.
Yeah, and to add to your point, Russell, I'm going to read the exact quote. You know, Gabe Vilardi, he registered 9:43 time on ice last night. It was the lowest of his season. And Todd McClellan said after the game, he needs to play better. He has to be a factor in the game. So to your point, he's kind of the latest in you know, one, two, three of a line of players that have recently been called out in Blake Lizotte's line. Adrian Kempe was the last one to be called out, and he ripped off 5 goals in 2 games against, albeit it was against the Ducks, so take it for what it's worth. But I'm interested to see how Vilardi responds tomorrow afternoon against Vegas.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, God, you guys are so nice.
Well, I got to tell you, I can't agree with it today. Sorry, guys.
Thank you.
I love Gabe Vilardi. He's a wonderful story after everything he's been through. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing. He's been given every single chance to succeed so far, and I realize there's been line juggling and all that. I know. But first it was the faceoffs, and now he's not shooting the puck enough. I understand. Listen, he's a young player, and he's going to get better. And I see him as the runaway number two center for the rest of this season and probably going into next season. And I'm not going to flunk him or anything like that. I would say he gets a B. You know, but it just, for me, he's got to start showing more aggressiveness out there if he really wants to hang on to this number two spot. Because going into next season, there is going to be a logjam of prospects fighting for center spots in training camp. And if he doesn't step it up and if he doesn't start impressing McClellan a little bit more, he very much will risk sliding down the hill a little bit.
Yeah, I'm gonna back up Scott on this. I'll give him a B plus because to me an A implies consistency, implies that you have been doing everything right. You know what I mean? And I 100% agree. You know, looking back to our discussion of him when he first debuted, I mean, we full on gushed. We had visions of Kopitar's debut when he had 2 goals in his debut. We're like, oh my God, Gabe's the second coming of that. I mean, and he still may be that guy. There's absolutely 100%. He's got the skill. He's got the size. He's got the ability. But just like any other young prospect, especially one that maybe is coming in and being thrust into a position of second line center with line juggling, with some injuries. I mean, we brought up Martin Furk. Guys played 10 minutes this entire season, okay? So there has been a lot of consistency issues. Face-offs, things like that, I can tolerate that. You're going to learn that. I don't expect him to go up in the circle against Ryan O'Reilly and beat Ryan O'Reilly. You know what I mean? Ryan O'Reilly wasn't beating guys the first season he was in the league. So that's going to come. But to me, if you're going to give him an A, that implies that he is doing everything right night in, night out, even if the production isn't necessarily there. And I'm not seeing that every single night. There's a lot of inconsistency. There's a lot of floating. And, you know, if he's going to be a guy that's carrying a line and isn't necessarily depending entirely on who his line mates are to produce, he's got to be that guy. You know, we're going to talk about Anderson Dolan probably at some point, but I feel like anyone who plays with Jad ends up elevating their game. And yet we're still trying to figure out who's going to be the guy with Vilardi, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have one question.
Sure.
Everyone, you guys know he's 21, right?
I'm well aware.
Okay. Cool. Just making sure.
I'm well aware.
No, listen, I'm joking and you guys are making great points, but think of this. Todd McClellan, with his resume, the years he's coached, the players he's coached, for him to feel comfortable to call out a 21-year-old center in the media tells you what he thinks of that player, and it's a positive thing. That means he believes he can take that adversity. That means he knows it's not gonna crush him, it's not gonna make him crumble, and I fully expect him to respond accordingly. How many coaches do you know at that experience level that will call out young players instead of coddling them, whether it be in the media, whether it be in the locker room? So to me, that shows me a lot of what our coach thinks of that player, and it further makes me want to give him another A. Let's give him another A.
Another A.
Yeah.
I mean, Carl, kind of to your point.
Well, there is his last name. All right, guys. So who's your next player?
So next, I think we should get into Adrian Kempe. How's everyone feel about that? I think Russell brought him up.
I'm
a piggyback on that.
Russ is chomping a bit.
Okay, good. I give Adrian Kempe a B this season. Okay. Very similar issues to me that he has had last season as well, which is very obviously the consistency. There are games where he looks like he is a 30 goal scorer. He looks like he's a guy who can take a game over, and there are games where he completely disappears. You know, Ryan, you brought this up. against Anaheim, house on fire, could not help but put pucks in the net. But again, that's against Anaheim. Against Colorado, against St. Louis, against Vegas, the last four games or five games, 0-for. In fact, -5 or something like that. And that's not just him. The entire team, you know, didn't play well against those teams. I fully admit that. But if we're going to be looking at this guy to be the next wave of player, to be the next kind of guy as a first-round pick, and as a guy who's older than the rest of the prospects we have coming in, there has to be a level of consistency. Because you can't – we don't know what we have with him yet. I mean, I swear, every time we look at him, we go, this is a 20-goal scorer. On its surface, with his talent and his ability, he is a perennial 20-goal scorer. And yet he's just not playing like that. So I don't know how much of a leash they have. I think in prior years, without a deep enough prospect pool, you maybe hang around and you hang around and you hang around. But like you guys mentioned, with the logjam of prospects coming in, I really do wonder how long they envision Adrian Kempe being a guy who's going to be part of this team in the future versus, you know, a guy that you plug in for a couple seasons until someone better comes along and you feel just fine moving out.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's definitely a fair assessment. You know, I mean, you got to remember, too, the Kings had such high hopes for him that he was going to end up being a top six forward. And I think, realistically, we have to accept the fact that he's a third liner. He's a third liner that can get you a goal every once in a while. But, you know, let's forget about him being in the top six.
Yeah, I mean, and I wrote
about I think all this talk.
And I was just saying, I wrote about Kempe the other day, and I said pretty much the same thing. You know, it's the consistency. And we just had a nice start to the year. Went invisible for a while, then had, you know, a great week last week, and now the last few games he's kind of been invisible again. So you just never really know what you're going to get with him. The skill is evident when he's playing well, but yeah, like with that, all those young forward prospects coming, I'm just still not sure if he's a long-term piece for this team or not.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I hear all this talk. Adrian Kempe is just an enigma to me because I hear all this talk about him being, oh, he's a 20-goal scorer. He's a top six forward. I mean, Adrian Kempe has never scored 20 goals in his whole career. And, I mean, that's going back to when he was playing in Sweden. He's never scored more than 20 goals. Why do we keep putting him in this position so we can make him, like, elevate his game to where he's not – I mean, that's not the type of game he is. I think of Adrian Kempe as almost like this – Carl Soderberg kind of player. He's going to get you. He's going to get deep in the offensive zone. He's going to forecheck. He's going to try to create some plays. But, I mean, if you think – and he's, I mean, on the power play, he's looked great. I mean, I think half of his points – I think he has 19 points in the season and 11 of them are on the power play. I might be wrong on that. But it's just – it's so frustrating to watch his game because I've mentioned this before. I almost just want to see a player on the other team just get, like – hit him like in the back of the head and so he can kind of wake up a little bit, and then all of a sudden you get angry Adrian Kempe for the rest of the game, because that's where he seems to elevate his game. This whole talk about him being on the line with Gabriel Vilardi, it's kind of disappointing because I do want to see Vilardi playing with someone who's a little bit better, and Kempe's had some pretty good chemistry with Lazat, so I'm hoping to see Kempe playing with him going forward, but I would probably give Kempe a C minus probably going right now. But if he can stay consistent and consistently put the puck in the net, then maybe that grade goes up.
And Russell, 8 of his 19 points have come on the power play.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and I mean, I will say, if I can just jump in real quick, sure. it has been a very nice change having him on the point on the power play. I would have never thought that that's where they would have played him. You know, you guys can feel free to disagree with us on this one, but one of the things we lamented is that when the Kings had Kovalchuk for that brief period of time, it seemed like they could never actually get the power play to run through Kovalchuk to be taking that shot. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden we're doing that with Adrian Kempe, who was nowhere near the goal scorer that Ilya Kovalchuk was. So he has been very, you know, he's been doing a great job there. And so that makes it even more frustrating to me that like they found a way to use his talent, the talent that I didn't know he possessed, and yet we still can't get any consistency out of him.
Yeah, please don't get me started on how badly the Kings misused Ilya Kovalchuk.
Thank you. Oh my God. Forget the rest of this episode. Let us talk about how Ilya Kovalchuk was misused by the Kings, because we can do 2 hours on that, no problem.
I'm with you 100%.
Well, yeah, Kempe is at a 14.5% shot percentage. He's got a career high 17 minutes average time on ice. the other night in the reverse retros, excuse me, he had that really nice drive to the net. That's what I've seen more from him this year, is attacking. But yeah, he's still not consistently getting the points. I mean, let me ask you this question, guys. If you had to pick one guy to keep long term, and granted they're 3 years apart, would you rather keep Alex Iafallo or Adrian Kempe?
Ooh, that's a spicy meatball. That's a great question, because I have to actually like think about that. But I will say this: I think we're at the point with Kempe where what you see is what you get. He's 24 years old. He's going to be 25 this year. I think we have a pretty good idea of what he is. And I think it's the same for Iafallo. I think what you see with him right now is probably what you're going to get. And if those are facts, and I think they are, I got to go with Alex Iafallo simply based on the fact that the prospects coming up for the Kings, the wingers specifically, look pretty good. I know there are some centers that could convert to wing. I think Kempe's in that center wing kind of hybrid role. And I think the way Kempe plays is very much a one and done kind of a player. I don't remember many shifts where Kempe dominated possession in the zone, got it to the point, and you know, the Kings had zone time for a long time. I see him very much as an on the rush threat. I see him as a, you know, get one good look and it's out of the zone. And that's not exactly all his fault. It's with who he's played, it's with situations like that. But I think you need Alex Iafallo to win, and I'm not sure if you need Adrian Kempe to win.
Yeah, because Kempe doesn't go to the dirty areas like Iafallo does.
Well, another thing that I am concerned about is, do you guys think Iafallo benefits from playing with Kopitar? I mean, you saw it from yesterday's game. Kopi shot the puck on net, bounced off Lehner, his pads, and then Iafallo was right there to scoop and score. I'm worried that Iafallo's production may take a dip if he gets replaced by an Arthur Kaliev or a Samuel Fagamo, or we've recently seen Alex Turcotte on the wing in Ontario, you know.
Well, who wouldn't benefit from playing with Kopitar, right? And, you know, I think
Iafallo's
been up, and he's been in the league for 4 years, and he spent almost all of it playing on Kopitar's wing. So, you know, he's a great fit up there, and, you know, even playing first-line minutes, he doesn't necessarily put up a ton of points. And, yeah, I mean, you know, if he were to – or if he's traded to another team, or if he does eventually move down the lineup a bit, yeah, his offense is probably going to fall off a bit. Not that, you know, he's lighting the world on fire to begin with, but he's one of those guys, you know, he does do the little things. He, you know, he goes to dirty areas, and he does do things that help you win games that don't always show up on the scoreboard.
And one thing I will say, yes, he – you know, I've asked this question myself. It's like – you know, is Alex Iafallo a top line winger? As is Alex Iafallo actually a top six winger? I think two seasons ago we had this whole thing. It's like, okay, well, this season he's on the top six, but next season he won't be because Kovalchuk's coming in, and it just never happened. So we've had guys come and go, and he's still been the number one option on the left side of Kopitar. So at some point you have to wonder, hey, maybe he is the perfect fit for this player. Andre Kopitar historically has never had, you know, amazing wingers. He's had good, solid wingers, you know, Justin Williams, Dustin Brown. Neither of these guys are 40, 50 goal scorers, but they just got the job done. And I think Kopi's the type of player, much like Sidney Crosby, but to a lesser degree, that he does not need perennial all-stars on his wing to be the effective player that he is. So I think we're at the point where it's not about is Alex Iafallo a top-line winger, is that he is the best fit for Kopitar and Brown right now. And I've accepted that, and I'm ready to move forward with that, because then all that does is give us more depth on the bottom line, which is what you need to win. And I'm glad we're talking about him, because he was going to be my next player that we're going to grade. It was going to be Iafallo, and I was going to give him a B+ for all the reasons kind of we just talked about. And the fact that year in and year out, players come and go, and every coach we've had still sees him as the best option for our best player. So with his limitations, and he has a few, and that's why I'm giving him a B+, because I think when you're on the line with Kopitar, you better finish at a high rate. And I think he is finishing in dirty areas, but I think he could be a little better in terms of lighting the lamp.
I like that grade for Iafallo. I think, I mean, we all kind of know he's not really going to be the top line left wing for a successful Stanley Cup contender, but I think he's elevated his game pretty well. If we get to a point where we have enough roster talent to where he's playing maybe left wing two or left wing three even, I think that's a very successful team because that's where he has the chance to succeed. He has the ability to get in those dirty areas and establish a forecheck, create some plays. But I mean, if he's going to be our left wing one going into next season, then I'll be a little scared. I have a little stat to throw at you guys. You guys know who the last Kings player was to score more than 35 goals in the season was?
Ooh, good question.
More than 35 goals.
Is it Ziggy Palfy?
Ziggy Palfy in 2002-2003 season. Wow. You know who scored 36 goals last season? Jack Eichel. So there's a little stat to throw at you. And it's funny because, I mean, the Kings have always been looking for that left wing one. So the fact that Iafallo is playing, he's playing pretty good up in that position right now, but we do need to find that established kind of scoring winger to play with Kopitar because, like you mentioned, Kopitar's never really had a scoring winger. It's kind of been sad to see because I do want to see Kopitar playing with a perennial scorer that he can set up and see how many points Kopitar can get. Kopi can get up to 90 to 100 points if he had that really high-powered scorer playing with him. So,
well, he got the 90 with Iafallo.
Yeah, that's right.
And you might get there again if this was a full season.
Yeah.
Hey, and you know, too, I mean, it doesn't seem possible, but within a couple of years, Kopi is going to be sliding down the lineup a little bit as guys like Byfield and hopefully Vilardi, even if Alex Turcotte goes back over to center, start moving their way up the lineup. So, you know, having Alex Iafallo down at left wing two or left wing three isn't going to be so bad because eventually Kopi is going to be there with him.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, you know, you have a situation like what the Pens had for many years where you had Crosby, Malkin, Staal, and all three lines had solid centers. You know, if everything goes the way it's supposed to, Kopi would slide down, not because he can't play anymore, but because the other guys will move up and prove that they're worthy of that 1C slot, you know? I'm perfectly fine with Iafallo being, you know, Ryan, going back to your question, I would give Iafallo a solid B to B plus as well. And I think long term, if I'm thinking of what's coming into this team and who I would rather keep and how that fits into what I think this team is going to need going forward, I think you keep Iafallo over Kempe. Honestly, I think, you know, Iafallo does the dirty work. He's okay with digging in. He can produce. I think my only disappointment was I think he was trending in a much better direction last season, and I was hoping to see a step forward this season. And I just haven't seen that for whatever reason. It's tough for me to judge when there's been 10-month layoffs for a lot of these guys. But I look at how Brown and Kopi have come out with a vengeance. And I was really hoping Iafallo would have kept up with them. And it's only recently that he started kind of showing up on the score sheet more so than just being a passenger on that line, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to add to that, really.
No, I think that pretty much sums it up right there, I think.
Yeah, we kind of hit on him with the Kempe, and we just kind of finished it off there. So the last forward that you guys have is Jarrett Anderson Dolan, and you guys all know how I feel about him, so go ahead and give us your grades, and I'll tell you that you're wrong.
I give him about as solid an A as I could possibly give him. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I just an A plus for me. The guy is incredible.
Okay. Okay. Good. The mistake was that I wasn't giving him enough credit.
No. I mean, the Kings have points in at least 1 point in 5 out of 8 games that he's been in. He's been a positive influence on the fourth line, and he's also been bumped up to the third line. I mean, what more could you ask from the guy?
Yeah, I think every game that I have witnessed him play, and granted, most of that has been with the Grundstrom-Moore line, which has been phenomenal, even the last couple games when the Kings really didn't look that great as a team. But there was brief periods of time, I think if I'm remembering correctly, where him and Vilardi were actually playing together too. And it's amazing because you would think that Gabe, again, would be the one carrying that. But every guy that this player plays with seems to elevate their game. He's just doing things that I don't know if I would call them flashy. He certainly has flashes of like incredible talent and things that you're a little surprised that he's pulling off. I remember the amazing backhand feed to Moore for Moore's first or second goal. I forget, but I mean, he threaded that pass between legs straight into the slot, you know, and he started that rush down on his own end. So I think he catches you off guard. He's not a big guy like Vilardi. He's not, you know, a flashy guy like Kempe. He's not doing all these things. And yet he's consistently putting up points, showing up, playing a solid two-way game. And to the point where the quotes that I had read from the coaching staff and the organization was that they were trying to encourage this guy to be more offensive because he had been so responsible on his own end of the ice that they thought he wasn't putting up enough points. That, you know, it's just, and that's just so nice to hear. I mean, that's the type of building block player that I think that you hope for when you draft these guys.
Yeah. And Carl, just one quick thing before you get in here. To your point, Vardy, his speed was not necessarily an element of his game that I was completely aware of, but you've seen it in so many, as you said, rushes up the ice. You know, yeah. He's created so many chances, and I can't give the guy enough credit. You know, the guys all on this podcast here know what big of a fan I am.
The player he reminds me most of is Justin Williams. And I was thinking about this, like, who does he remind me of? Because when you look at him as an individual and his skill set, I don't think there's anything that truly you would call elite. And I remember always thinking that about Justin Williams. Like, it's like, you know, if someone asked me to describe Justin Williams, it would be very difficult because he wasn't the greatest skater. He didn't have the hardest shot. He didn't have the biggest size. But whatever he did have just seemed to work all together. And I think Jerry Anderson Dolan reminds me of him in so many ways. It's obviously the character stuff, the intangible stuff is all in line with Williams. And I think the way the little hints of creativity, the little hints of ability to finish, Williams had that ability to score big goals, had that ability to surprise you sometimes with a skill play, with a placement of a shot. And you're like, wow, I didn't know he had that until he did it like seven times in the most important parts of the season or in the playoffs. And you're like, okay, now I know what this player is. And I think we always talk about filling boxes. Dean Lombardi kind of always talked about this player fills this box. I can't think of any player or prospect, I should say prospect, outside of maybe Vilardi, where I'm so confident that this player has already locked up a position with the team long-term as I am with Jared Anderson Dolan. So I can't argue against the grade at all.
If he's your fourth line center when you have the likes of Byfield, Turcotte, all these other centers that are coming up, I think you have a very good problem on your hands.
Yes,
you'd be a great winger too. That's why. Yeah,
true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
some of them are going to have to move.
That's right. That's right.
You know, speaking of Byfield, I just wanted to ask you guys, you think he's in the NHL next year?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Oh, man, that's so tough.
He's so young. This is, you know, I had this, my barber is a big Kings fan. He's like, why isn't Byfield in the NHL? And I was like, you know, it's different because everyone's looking at Tim Stützle and how, you know, dynamic he is. And you could kind of see, okay, this kid next year might really break out. But you have to remember that Stützle was not only a whole year older than Quinton, but he's also played against men for the last two seasons. He's been a pro. He's played against 25, 26-year-olds, guys who are fully developed physically and in terms of their game. So I don't – my thing has always been don't rush young players. But at the same time, in the last handful of years, the NHL is trending towards young players making impacts early. So I'm very torn on do we want him already to come in here and show us what he's got, or do we want him to, like, marinate? To me, we're not ready – as a team to really make any noise, in my opinion, until maybe not next season, the year after. So I'm all about keeping him in the junior, or I think he'll be AHL next year. I'm not sure where the age cutoff is, but yeah, he's still being junior, right?
He's still being junior.
Yeah. So, and the fact that he's not in junior this year, it makes it even more weird, right? You're like, because you're thinking like, okay, he's in the AHL now, and do we, like, throw him back to junior next year? Because it's going to be junior or NHL. So it's a very weird – I guess my answer, and I know we're going with grades, so I'm going to keep with the theme, is incomplete on that question. That I just don't know. I'm very torn on that.
You have to be tempted, though. Sorry, just real quick, Vardy. You have to be tempted, though, with seeing the Ducks promote Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale. And then the Sharks were also talking about promoting some of their young guys in the second half of the season.
But those guys are older, though. I think it goes back. And here's – I will preface this by saying I think he's going to play in the NHL next season. And I'll tell you, in a regular season, when he did not have the option to play in the AHL and he would have stayed in juniors this year, I don't think he plays in the NHL next year. But I think this year, with them having the ability to put him in the AHL, see what he can do, have him play there for 18, 25, whatever many games it may be before the OHL restarts again. And I'm pretty confident he's going to get an NHL game in before they send him back. I mean, they're not going to waste the opportunity to get him up and have him get an NHL game or at least some practices on the taxi squad before they send him back. But I don't think as an organization they can take this golden opportunity that they've been handed with him, with Kaliev, and having them play AHL minutes, AHL games, come up, practice on the practice squad with the NHL, do all these things without burning a single year off of their NHL contract, and then still feel comfortable sending them back next season to the juniors and not being afraid that they're going to develop some terrible habits and backtrack and do all those things. I think that they're forcing the Kings' hands in the best way possible, and I think they're going to end up playing NHL hockey next season.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, on that one, I tend to think that, you know, I understand that nobody wants to rush Byfield. I get it, right? But unless that CHL-NHL agreement changes,
right,
you got no
choice. Which it might, because they are talking about that.
They might, you're right. But if it doesn't change, I think he's got to be in the NHL next year for the simple reason that he now seems like he's getting pretty comfortable in the AHL. I mean, he's been on fire for the past few games, right? And to send him back to the OHL, is that really going to do anything for his development to just basically dominate 16 to 17 year olds? I think he's got to be around the Kings coaching staff and around the Kings players to further his development, because he's certainly physically ready. There's no doubt about that. He's certainly strong enough to play in the NHL. So, you know, that's just my humble opinion.
Scott, the other added challenge is he would have to quarantine for a third time this year, thus taking a 2-week break in playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or whatever the protocol is now. I haven't kept up to date, but
yeah, because yeah, I don't even want to go back on Byfield.
I mean, I think the decision for Byfield is kind of almost out of the Kings' hands. I mean, they're almost kind of tied to what is going on up in Canada. I mean, if the OHL starts, you can't send him back. You have to keep him. I don't think they're going to play him enough games, the 7 games, to burn in a year off his ELC. But I think we'll see him on the NHL roster, and I think we'll see probably 6 games out of him and juggling back and forth between healthy scratch or not.
Sure.
Yeah, and keep in mind, I think he was 17 going on 18 when he got drafted. So if he goes back to juniors next season, it's his 18-19. He can't play unless the agreement changes. He can't play in the AHL unless he's 20 years old. Mm-hmm. So you're not talking just one season in juniors. I think you're talking 2 full additional seasons in juniors. I mean, is that really going to help this kid in any way, honestly?
Yeah, it's a tough situation. I don't know what going back to junior, if that does a lot of good for him next year, essentially, you know, a demotion after playing this year in the AHL and maybe the NHL at some point. One thing I will say is, you know, I wasn't that impressed at the World Juniors. He was pretty quiet. And it's a tournament, you know, if someone's on the precipice of being in the NHL and belonging in the NHL, kind of want to see them dominate the way a guy like Trevor Zegras did in that tournament. I know you can only put so much stock into the World Juniors, but I think we knew, you know, get back to what, you know, Cairo was saying, people knew when we drafted Byfield that Stutzel was the more NHL ready player. The betting was Byfield is going to be the better bet long term. So I'm okay with being patient with him and not necessarily putting him in the NHL next season unless he really makes it look like he's ready. But at the same time, it is going to be tough, you know, after playing this year in the AHL, to be like, okay, go back to Sudbury and score 150 points next year. Like, what does that do for him?
All right. Well, I guess time will tell. All right. So who's next on the list as far as the current roster goes?
Let's see. Who did we have? The next one we wanted to grade. How about we start with Drew Doughty? I give Drew a solid A-. I think
I didn't expect that.
Is that higher or lower than what you thought?
I thought you were going to go lower.
Oh, well, there you go. No, I think had he continued playing the way he did the beginning of the season, I would have gone lower, but that's where the minus comes in. I think he's really turned into the, you know, he's really bought into his spite season, shall we say. And he's done really well, I think, over the last, let's say, 20 games or so. I think he's played a much quieter game. And he may disagree with me, and we've talked about this before, but I think he plays his best game when he plays a quiet, effective game. He seems to think that like he's doing more. I think he's doing less, and he's doing a fantastic job doing less. He's making simple plays, getting shots through on the power play, carrying, you know, making a good first pass to start the play, and positioning himself much better. That's all I really want from him, and so he gets an A- from me.
Well, that stretch pass up to Kopitar for the shot on net last night is a perfect example of what you're talking about.
Yeah, doesn't have to go through four sticks. Just put it right where it needs to be. That's it.
I'm going to give him a B. the reason is, look, the beginning of the year, I had a lot of problems with his game. Has he improved? Yes, dramatically, right? Like the last 10, maybe 15 games, specifically the work he's doing on the power play, it has been exceptional. So I'm going to give him that all day. But then when I think back to the first handful of games of the season, he was not good, man, not good. And it's very frustrating with him because he is such an elite talent and he cares so much about winning and cares so much about the team that you can't – like, you always love him. Even when he's playing poorly, he's the type of player and the type of person from everything we've seen that you always love him. But I want to see – more, and I want to see it for a longer period of time before I can really give him that A number or letter, I should say.
Well, he's already got it on his sweater anyway, so.
I agree with both of your guys' craze. I mean, I could see it both ways. You know, he's had a really good stretch here lately, and he's been, as you said, Carl, fantastic on the power play this year. Great mentor for the young guys too.
Yeah, I think he's the number one reason why the power play is doing so well. I honestly do. Mm-hmm. It starts with him, then obviously Kopi and Brown doing kind of cleanup in front of the net. Those three guys, man, the three guys that have been carrying this franchise for 10 some odd years, those three are the reason why the power play is excelling. I have no question in my mind about that.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, Matt, so who's next?
Matt Roy? We're doing Matt Roy? Russ, Matt Roy. I'll let you talk about him after this.
So for Matt Roy, here's the thing. I'm going to give him an A-, and it's strictly because of one thing. And I didn't dig into numbers. I didn't dig into advanced stats. All I know is this. The second he came back into the lineup, the Kings went on a winning streak, or they had 1-1 or 2, and then the second he came into the lineup, they seemed like they changed the way they were playing. They played more confident. The defense played much better in their own zone. Pucks were leaving our zone at a better rate. Certainly, it's not all him, but never in my wildest dreams did I think that player would make that big of a difference. Now, granted, at the same time, Sean Walker was ailing as well. So they were both out simultaneously, which is a crushing blow. Again, something that last year I wouldn't think would be a crushing blow to have Sean Walker and Matt Roy out of the lineup was devastating this season to us. And the second he came back, it seemed like defensively especially, we got confidence in our game and we started kind of rattling off wins. Obviously, there are more things to it than that, but I look at that as kind of a spark plug to what occurred in that very beautiful stretch.
Yeah, I'm almost the Matt Roy Stan account on Twitter. I mean, that guy, anytime he's in the lineup, this team's going to be successful. Like you mentioned, when he was out of the lineup, the team went on that slide, and as soon as he came back, all of a sudden we're on the winning streak. His analytical numbers speak for themselves. I mean, when he came in as a rookie, or his rookie year, I would say, he was great. He was putting up better numbers than Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes when it comes to analytics, so... He's that glue on the defensive side, and he's going to be an RFA after this year. And I think the Kings are kind of lucky because he's not really going to be looking forward for that big time contract. I mean, if you can get him for a deal between a 3 to 4 million range for a couple years. To have that kind of production on the blue line, that's just going to be great. And we've been looking for that kind of Willie Mitchell, Rob Scuderi type player, Matt Roy's, all that and more. Can't complain. Yeah, A-plus for me.
To your point, Russell, and also Carl, I mean, there's a reason that Todd McClellan calls him the Steady Eddie. The only thing I will say is I would like to see a little more offense from him. And I guess that goes for the entire defense. I mean, it's really just Drew Doughty scoring for the defense. And that's Curtis true. McDermott. So
we don't speak that name.
Yeah.
be glad he's not on the list today, guys. That's all.
Yeah.
Might have been a bloodbath. Anyway, carry on.
Well, and truthfully, Matt Roy is the reason that they can go out and get an offensive defenseman in the offseason and not have to worry about it being so much of a defensive liability, because you put him with Roy and he's going to cover him. There's just no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Matt's the kind of player that if you don't notice him, that's a good thing, right? Like we said lot about Rob Scuderi's game. Sometimes Willie Mitchell, we said about his game. But I think he's that type of defenseman. I'm going to say that for Mikey Anderson as well. I think the less you notice them, most likely the better they're playing, because they're just kind of that steady kind of player. No flash, is doing their job and just getting off the ice when they have to.
Yeah, I'll go with A-. I got nothing.
Yeah, I loved that. when he said that his role model was Nicklas Lidström. That's like perfect. Right. That's the exact type of player I see him as. I mean, I don't see him as being as great and winning all those Norris trophies as Nick Lidström did, but like you mentioned, if he's not noticeable during a game, then he's playing a great game, and that's exactly what Nick Lidström did.
Absolutely.
Kind of in a perfect segue to right to Sean Walker, then, who we just briefly touched on. What do you guys have for him?
I give Sean Walker a B this season, and some of that is not of his own doing. I think to have half of your season erased from a horrific injury like the one he took is a challenge for any player to overcome. And so I think even when he came back from that injury, the first 4 or 5 games, he did not seem like himself. You know, it takes a lot. I think it takes a lot to get the confidence back, to get back and playing that way, especially as a defenseman when your job is to be the barrier between the goaltender and the puck. And so it took a little bit, but I feel like over the last couple games especially, I have started seeing him going back to playing the way he was last season, where he was carrying the play, pushing the offense. Even last night, like one of the goals was a result of him kind of head faking and making a drive down the half wall and going beyond behind the net. That's the type of bold offense that you were hoping to get from him, that I think we all saw from him his first season up here, and kind of took us all by surprise that we had this kind of player in the system that made us think that, like, hey, we got a solid second pairing offensive defenseman here, you know? And so I give him a B because I think he still clearly has that ability. I think the entire – it's weird, man. This season's been so weird for so many reasons. I feel like the first 6 to 7 games, the whole team just looked like garbage. They were just kind of coming back from not having played hockey for 10 months. And then just as they were getting things together, you lose Roy, you lose Walker. I mean, the injuries kind of piled up, and then there was a lull again. And then finally, once those guys got back, I feel like now you're starting to see them play better, even if they're not necessarily beating the Colorados and the Vegases of the world. I feel like this is closer to what I think this team should be playing like and what their individual players truly play like. And so I think if Walker can keep playing the way he is now, maybe that B goes higher up. But right now I give him a solid B.
I think that's a pretty good grade. And you know what? Obviously, he's still suffering from the effects of that injury too. You can just see it. I don't know if it's having to have the cage back on or what. And I think as he gets more time back from that injury, he's going to look better.
I can't imagine his equilibrium is
on there.
I do have a quick question for you guys, though. Do you see him as a long-term piece on the LA Kings roster?
Another interesting one. Right now, I would say yes, simply because when you look at the Kings' defensive pipeline, there isn't too much there where you could see him being supplanted rather easily. It's going to take a lot, I think, to get him off the Kings' top 6 defense. I think Austin Strand is a great defenseman. I think I'd like to see more of him. Obviously, Toby Bjornfoot, who I'm sure we're going to talk about next or soon here. I think he's another guy that you're hoping that he takes strides. But right now, I don't see anyone really threatening him. I think he's a good player. I think I've already gave him a B. I'll go a little lower, maybe a B minus, because I think he's a good puck mover. But one thing I've noticed with him is when he does turn it over, he really turns it over. Like, it's you know what I mean? It's not you don't have to like study the game tape. You know when that Walker turnover happened and how much it hurt the team. I go back to that Ducks game where I think it's one of the worst turnovers I've ever seen. He skates around the net and it's a backhand pizza right in front, right into the slot, and it's like tic-tac-toe and it's in the net. Like any other team, if this team was competing, he's going to be in the bleachers the next game. He's not playing. He's in the press box. That's how bad it was. And I think if he cleans those up, I think he's a hell of a player. He's still a hell of a player, but you clean those things up, I think you're solidifying a spot on this defense now and in the future.
He's another guy, though, that I want to see more from offensively. And I don't mean 5 goals, 19 assists last year. He has just 4 assists this year. Obviously, you guys touched on it. His injury still plays a part in that. But maybe we're starting to see what we saw from him last year, you know, driving to the net and creating scoring chances. Here's to hoping.
Yeah, it does feel like his offense has fallen off a bit. And, you know, again, it was a really tough injury to deal with this year and come back. And, you know, some guys don't like playing with a cage. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Maybe that's affecting him somehow. But, yeah, it would be nice. We do need some more offense from the back end for sure. It can't be just Drew Doughty putting the power play points all year, especially at even strength. We need guys like Walker to start generating a little more for us.
And Curtis McDermott.
Yeah.
What do you mean? He's an offensive machine.
Second leading scorer. What are you talking about? Oh, God. All right. So I think that's going to pretty much wrap up the defenseman, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, one more. Let's do a quick rate on Tobias Bjornfoot, and then we can
okay.
move on.
Yep. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. With Toby, obviously young player, inexperienced, I think he also is the type of player that really needs to steady his game to the point where he's less noticeable. I think last year when he was paired with Doughty for that very, very short stretch, I think we all got a little too excited with him. I think now we see that he needs a lot more maturity to his game, because I think his peak is a mature game, a game of poise, right? Like Russell mentioned Nicklas Lidström. I think that's with his skill set. I think you want him to be a light version of Lidström or a poor man's Lidström. I think that's a hell of a ceiling for him. And I think he has that ability to do that. His poise still impresses me, but you see some reads or you see some plays where he's overplaying the puck instead of the man. I think his physicality needs to go up. I think he's a C for me. I think that if that's harsh, I don't know, but I really think maybe not his fault, but I really think we got a little too excited last year when he was paired at the top pairing with Doughty and he showed some promise. And I think now he rolls into the season and every mistake is like so magnified with him because of those expectations. I think he has a lot to learn. I think, of all, you know, from the young defensemen we've seen this year, including Austin Strand, I think he's the one that probably needs the most seasoning. And I think once he gets that, I'll have him a little higher on my list.
Yeah, I'll give him a C as well, man. I just, it's so evident to me from one game to the other that in any other situation, he would not be playing NHL minutes. Like, he would be given more time to season, more time to develop. He just I don't see a lot of confidence in his game. I think he plays positioning. I think he tries to do the right things, but he doesn't have a lot of flexibility. You know, when things don't quite go exactly right, I don't see him making a smart play to bail himself out of situations and stuff. And so I think respectfully, if he is the best defensive prospect that we have or the most advanced defensive prospect that we have right now, I think that's a very, very troublesome spot to be in. That's not to say he can't be great, but he's just not there yet. And I think he's a full probably 2 seasons away from really being able to give him a fair evaluation.
What did Carl say earlier about Gabe Vilardi? You guys know he's 19, right?
I do. I do.
No, I'm gonna give Toby a B plus. I mean the McKinnon goal, or I mean the Kadri goal. Yeah, sure. He's a young kid. He's gonna give up plays like that. He's gonna be aggressive in the defensive zone. I get it, but he has the talent. He's smooth skating. Give him some time. He could be that top four kind of, I don't want to say shutdown kind of defenseman, but he's got a little bit of dynamic game to him. I see more of like a Nicholas Jalmerson is who I see when I watch him play. And he's that glue guy that you need for the top four. I can see him a second pair, a left D for a, I think the Matt Roy pairing with him was pretty good going for the first couple of games. His first couple, like six games, he didn't give up he wasn't on the ice for a goal against. So that's really good when a 19-year-old comes in.
But that's really the Matt Roy effect.
Yeah, exactly. go back to Matt Roy if you want. But yeah, Toby's looked great. And as I mentioned, he's only 19 years old. Give him a couple more seasons, and I think he can blossom into that top four kind of defenseman that we need.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, there's definitely, he's going to need some more time. There's no denying that. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, like you guys said, this is normally he would be in the AHL. And I almost kind of wonder if they didn't make a mistake by getting some more defensive depth for this season, just this season alone, really, just to give those time guys like Bjornfoot a little bit more time to percolate, but a little too late now.
Yeah.
To your point, kind of, Russell, Jalmerson took four full NHL seasons to eclipse the 20-point mark, and he was 26 years old. I mean, defensemen just naturally take a little bit longer to develop. Absolutely. So he'll get there.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so why don't we move on to the goalies? Which one of the two do you guys want to do first?
The easy one or the hard one? Which one?
Let's do the hard one first. Get it out of the way.
All right. Johnny Quick. I give him a C plus, man. I really
I love
do.
The sigh.
I do. I mean, it's hard. It's hard. You know, it is what it is. It's like, you've known going into the season that the writing's kind of on the wall. Is time in a King sweater is pretty much numbered for one reason or another. And it's just, it's hard, man. It's hard for me to watch games like the one last night and just see him not have that same level of mental confidence from one game to the next. You know, he's had his moments, certainly. He's pitched a shutout here and there, I think. But more often than not, and you can blame the team in front of him, and I fully accept that. The defense is not what it should be. But the fact is, Peterson's playing with the same defense in front of him, and we're getting different results. And so there's too many times where a puck goes past him, or he's forced to make a tough save, and then the rest of the time he's just swimming. He's just going back and forth. And that's always been a little bit of his game. I admit you that. It's a lot of reflex and athleticism, but it's just not there, man. It's just not from game to game. I'm not seeing him making easy saves sometimes. I'm not seeing him make consistent hard saves. And a lot of times he just looks like he'd rather be anywhere but there. You know, just fighting the puck a lot. So, C plus.
Oof, daggers.
Sorry, bro.
I was talking about this with the guys last night. You throw out his two shutouts against Minnesota and St. Louis. He has a 3.36 goal against average.
Solid 1980s goaltending numbers.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is why I'm a little surprised whenever I see his name come up in trade rumors right now. It's like, I just can't see who would want him. I mean, you know,
right.
I love Jonathan Quick, but exactly, given the contract, what's still left on it, the way he's played the last few years, the age, like, who looks at Jonathan Quick as a solution in net for them right now?
I think teams that are looking to make a playoff run, and they still hope he's got that big game ability to be there and be your second guy when you're making a run.
If I were the Oilers, I would take a shot at him.
Yeah,
right.
Although Mike Smith's numbers kind of shocked me when I looked at him the other day. He's having a great year.
I don't care what his numbers say. I've always said this, Jack. I've always said this. I don't care. Show me all the statistics you want. Mike Smith is not a good goalie. I don't care what he does. That's just how I feel.
I don't trust him to sustain it at all. I just don't know if I'm betting on Quick's contract either.
No, that's true. That's fair.
Carl, you and I were kind of going back and forth on Twitter, and like Mike Smith's first few games, he had this ridiculous goals against, and then you sent me this message of like him getting him allowing five goals and getting chased. We're like, ah, there he is.
There's this one highlight this year, and I don't want to go on a Mike Smith tangent. I forgot who scored on it, but it's one of the most horribly angled, horribly goaltended shots I have ever seen, the way he angled this puck. It was hilarious. Anyway, who were we talking about? Our goalie, right? Jonathan Quick. Yeah. I got to agree with Vardy's grid and everything.
Vardy Bam.
Said. I know. Listen, it's heartbreaking because we know who this player is. We know what he's done for us. He's going to the rafters. He's probably a Hall of Famer. He's probably the greatest American goaltender who ever played with respect to Mike Richter. Everyone's clock is ticking, man. Everyone's human. And as great as Kopi is right now, one day the clock's the sand's running in the hourglass, and one day it's going to empty at the top. And that's just the way it is. And I think with Quickie, with the expansion draft coming up, I think it's inevitable that one way or another his days are numbered with the Kings. And he just doesn't look like the same goalie. Nor do I expect, should we expect this guy with the mileage he has on him, with the type of game he plays, the athleticism he displays, like the wear down effect is real. Like three long playoff runs where he, in one of which he carried the team. All the years after that, he played a lot of games under Daryl. Daryl always played him. He didn't care. As many starts as he can. That's why we had a revolving door of backups, because it really didn't matter who our backup was, because Quickie's going to play like 60 plus games a year. So it's going to happen, and it hurts me to give him this C-plus grade, but I'll always look at him fondly. But I think it's Cal Peterson time right now for the Kings.
Yeah, like Vardy mentioned, I mean, a player like a goaltender like Quickie with the athleticism that he kind of brings, that's hard to sustain for a long career. Right? We always talk about, like, he's kind of like that Dominic Hasek kind of player. Dominic Kostic played till he was, 43 years old. So you kind of give a lot of credit to him. And if a team can kind of pick him up and give him maybe like 30 to 40 games a year, and then have him be that playoff type goaltender he was when he was winning those cups with the Kings, that's a good pickup. I can see the Penguins maybe making a trade for him.
That's a great one, yeah.
Yeah, if you can trade, if the Kings maybe eat some of that contract, like Jack mentioned, he's got 5.8 left for three more years. That's a hefty deal to be paying, especially if he stays on the Kings. We don't really want that kind of contract for a backup goaltender. So if you can make a deal for him, eat some of that deal, eat some of that contract, and trade him to a perennial cup contender, I think he'll succeed if he's given the opportunity.
Yeah, I don't think the cap space means anything for the Kings. They'll swallow that, no problem. They got space for days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and like I said, who knows him better than Ron Hextall, huh?
No, absolutely,
Daryl.
I think Calgary's okay in net.
Yeah, I think so. All right, so that leaves Cal Peterson.
Yes, it does. I'm going to go with a B for Cal. I know we throw out a lot of Bs in this episode, but I think it's the correct grade for him.
We're kind of a B team, aren't we, though?
Yeah, the whole team gets a B. But Cal, listen, he's played, I would say, 75% of his starts have been great performances from him. There's just been one or two where you just kind of go like, need a little bit more from you there. That one game in Anaheim where it was that shootout, that 6-5 game, I thought it was his worst game I've ever seen him play. That's going to happen, right? But I think what you want is his ability to at least bounce back from goals. And I think that's the one thing that we got spoiled with Jonathan Quick is like, it doesn't matter. It never mattered with him how many you scored on him. All he cared about was the next save. And in that game, I saw cracks from Cal. And again, I'm being overcritical, but that's kind of what we do when we give grades. I saw cracks of a player that once one or two beat him, that he kind of started, his body language went somewhere where I don't want to see. And that's one of the few times that's happened, but I think he can clean that up a little bit because I think he's a starter. He's a starter right now. If I was Todd McClellan, he would be my number one guy right now, straight away. With all due respect to the guy before him, I think it's Cal Peterson's time to play. And I think once you give him that, I think he's the type of personality that will thrive on that, because it's not official. And I don't know, you know, I've never been in an NHL locker room. I don't think a coach stands in front of the team and says, guys, this is our number one goalie. Like, I don't think that really happens, especially in a situation like this. But I think it's time. And I think I like to see him just be a little bit more consistent in his game.
I give him an A minus, man. I mean, he's been everything you want him to be. It's clear where this is headed. It's clear that he's got poise. He's never too high, never too low, in my opinion. Fine, he had one bad game with body language issues, whatnot. But like,
needs to be perfect.
Sorry, you're right. You're right. Just like Jonathan Quick, right? The guy who never let in a soft goal ever. Now he's. I have the utmost confidence in the direction of the goaltending with him at the helm going forward. Who the backup will be remains to be seen, and probably is not that relevant unless something horrific happens to Cal. I'm very confident in having him as the starter going forward for the rest of the season, for next season, for the next 5-10 years, honestly.
Yeah, the Anaheim game was definitely rough, but I mean, other than that, you know, he's given up three or fewer goals in 12 of his other 14 starts. He's still got a 922 on the year, even with that Anaheim game. So, you know, that one really bad game, yeah. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I can't really complain about Cal Peterson, and the difference between him and Quick right now, honestly, is pretty stark. Whenever you see either one play,
yep, absolutely.
I was actually amazed Quick started last night, given that they're playing Friday, Sunday, and Monday. I was very surprised to see that.
Yeah, man, it's Cal's time. I think it's his crease. And
absolutely.
I'd love it if it became more evident.
I think we knew Quick and Cal were going to start Sunday and Monday in some order. But, yeah, I expected Cal in that, since he has a better track record against Vegas.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, going with Cal game. Friday and then Quickie Sunday and Cal Monday, but I don't think that's going to happen now, guys. All right. Well, hey, listen, we've been going on for over an hour now. Can you believe that?
Yep. That's how it happens, man. What am I telling you? You start with a bullet points and then it just spirals.
Look, something like this deserves a runtime that's a little longer than
that's
usual.
Right.
What's the longest episode that you guys have had?
We have a couple hour 40s in there sometimes. Oh, we don't even realize we're doing it. Like, we start off and the next thing I know, I look and it's midnight and I'm like, damn it, we did it again.
Another thing, when you don't record as often as you'd like, you end up having to cover like 3 weeks of stuff and you end up going like 90 minutes and you're like, oh shit, we have a family. And
Yeah.
And then my wife is angry. Awesome.
Well, with that said, gentlemen, I think we're going to wrap this up. Listen, we just want to thank you guys for coming on and being a part of our show. It was so much fun. And, you know, let's do this again sometime.
It'll be our pleasure, man.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Yeah,
thanks for coming on, guys. And just want to iterate more. It's a collaboration, not a competition. We should all
absolutely
be helping each other.
100%.
Guys, that's with every – I mean, honestly, it's all family here. It doesn't matter to us.
No doubt about it. All right. Well, everybody, that was Vardy and Carl from the Bannerman Podcast. You guys are on Apple, Spotify, all the major podcast platforms. So give them a listen when you get a chance. Thanks again, gentlemen. We really appreciate it.
See you guys.
Cheers, boys.
See you guys. All right. Have a good one.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Hockey Royalty Podcast. We want to thank you for tuning in, and we will be back in a few days with a new episode. But for now, for Ryan Sykes, for Russell Morgan, for Jack Weber, I'm Scott Kinville signing off. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
Good night, guys.